One of the things about being a male, a man, is that I love routines. I'm a routine guy. I think I'm a simple guy on what I do and how I do things. And for the last year or so, a little bit over a year, we have created a routine, my mother and I. I will argue that I'm not a mama's boy. Some people will argue the opposite. But I get to spend a lot of time with my mother now because we go to MD Anderson, and some of you know the situation with my mother, and she goes for chemo, and you know we spend a lot of time together for about 3 days, just driving all the way, coming back, and all that. Well, the thing is that this week, when this whole situation of the MD Anderson visit came into place, again, routines, we know the routine. The routine was a little disrupted. It was a little different, and for the first time in about a year and a half or so since we started going, I was handed at the very beginning of the day. We begin around 6 a.m. in the morning. I was handed some papers and said, "Can you fill this out?" And I'm like, "Why? I never filled papers. I mean, paperwork. I mean, it's pretty much just kind of the same drill." So anyway, so I took the papers and I, you know, did some of the updating on her information. But then I noticed that the second half of the papers was about her spiritual journey. And literally the paper, I mean, this is MD Anderson in Houston, right? One of the biggest hospitals. I mean, this is just one of the epicenter of science, I guess, in cancer treatment. And so I'm going through the whole thing, and then suddenly I'm just, you know, faced with this thing about spirituality. So the paper asks openly, you know, about your spiritual walk and who you are and what you believe and if you actually go to church or you attend any type of, you know, religious practices. And you gotta come back to the story with me, because MD Anderson is such a massive place. It's like a city. I mean, it's just blocks and blocks and blocks of, you know, buildings, with tall buildings, that when you walk through these places, you will find multiple chapels, you know, places for prayer, from Christian to non-Christian to Hinduism and Buddhism and Islam, because we live in a country that we have the blessing to have freedom of speech and religion. So I'm not against those things. I'm just saying that it's very diverse. So when I'm filling this out, in my mind, as a pastor, I just couldn't resist it. I'm going back into two things. Number one, I'm trying to think as a non-Christian. Like, if I'm not a Christian, I'm just going back, whether I have religious affiliation, non-religious affiliation, or maybe a different religion, I'm just going through this and I'm thinking, okay, how will someone fill this out? That was my first thought, because I have seen the chapels, and I think it's just phenomenal to see the diversity on people's, you know, belief systems. But the second thing, that's where I'm going for the next few minutes, the paper forced me to reflect on my mother's spiritual journey. She's 65 years old. I'm the oldest of three. I have two sisters. And we as a family, we came to know Jesus through her. I'll just put it to you that way. She was the catalyst. And so I'm filling this thing up, and some of them I'm asking her, but most of it I didn't have to ask, because I know her fair enough that I can just go through this. But there's a point in the conversation, there's a point in the whole thing where the paper asks you if you would like to have a chaplain, a pastor, to come and visit you. And again, I'm just thinking and reflecting as a 65-year-old lady, you know, the journey that she has walked through, raising us, marriage. I mean, just I can think of so many, you know, spheres and stages of life. I couldn't help it, but I believe what we are about to read is kind of in the same scenario, the same flavor, the same tune. It is in the book of Acts, so you have a Bible. Go to the fifth book of the New Testament. And the writer, he's a historian. He's bringing the memories and the experiences of someone else. In this case, his name is Paul, the guy preaching or speaking. The writer is a different guy. His name is Luke. It's one of the writers, one of the historians. But the one is speaking that we're about to read. I believe that Paul, as an apostle, he is writing, he's preaching, he's talking, he's conveying the message kind of in the same manner, the way that I looked at this week's, you know, filling on this paperwork. Because, again, you got to go back with me into how my trips to Houston look like. So we typically drive into Houston around 8, 9 p.m. the previous day, spend the night, and then early in the morning, by 6 a.m., we got to be in the hospital. And the whole thing begins until about 6:30, 7 p.m. And she goes from test to test to test, a little break, we eat lunch, and then just test all day long. So my role, what I do, literally what I do, I'm the driver, I'm the guy who prays with her every time she goes into testing. And then every test is about two and a half hours to 3 hours. So typically those are really nice, big, comfortable lobbies, waiting areas, full of people. So you put a pastor with a bunch of people sitting down for hours, and we're going to engage the gospel. I promise you, it's going to happen. So I'm listening to conversations. I'm listening to stories. I'm overhearing some people. It's just all over the place. And everybody has that sense of reflection, coming into the place where you are looking back and reflecting over your journey in life. Many of them. My mother is, and sometimes we get into those conversations. That's exactly what is happening. It is no irony that for us, the month of November, we're focusing on generosity because, ironically, this guy by the name of Paul, he's reflecting. And his thoughts, his teaching, specifically because his audience, who he is speaking to, is a group of chaplains or pastors or elders. So he, as a senior chaplain, senior pastor, senior shepherd, he is talking to these guys. And his reflection has to do with generosity. I'm reflecting and I have to write these things that I'm reflecting over my life, I just don't know if I'll go through generosity. I don't know. I'm just different, and I'm not inspired like Paul, but he does. And when what he says is extremely important, because look at how he brings into verse 32. He uses the now, obviously, again, closing, reflecting, going back into memory lane. And he basically says, I, senior chaplain, senior pastor, senior elder, I am committing, this is a plural, most used in the Bible are plural, this is important, we'll come back to that. You all, he's talking to pastors, I'm committing you to God. So from the get-go, if you notice what he's given us or what he's teaching us this morning to these pastors is the concept of saying, although I have authority, although I've been placed in charge, although I am a pioneer, an entrepreneur, I'm a church planter, I start things, here's the thing. Once you involve the person of God, your authority, your role, your perception is limited. What does that mean? That implies that he is using the concept of simply entrusting you because I'm just a manager. I'm a steward. I'm simply someone that although I disciple you, although I train you as a pastor, more than likely, I am the originator of most of these churches in this Asia Minor provinces. He is basically saying, I'm not ultimately in charge. So generosity always begins with the perception that this is ultimate authority and this is limited authority. So you need to write this down, because for some of us, if you were to reflect in your life, I'm here to tell you, I'm old enough to tell you this. Most of the suffering, most of the complications, most of the tragedies, most of the misery that I have experienced in life is because I decided to switch the roles. I behaved, I thought, I reacted, I made decisions thinking that I had ultimate authority versus temporary authority. So I am not minimizing his authority as a shepherd, as a pastor, as an elder, as a chaplain. I'm not minimizing what you do and who you are as a father, as a grandparent, whatever role you may have in life. But generosity begins by understanding who God is and who you are in light of who he is. Does that make sense? Now, look at this. Not only who God is, but also his essence, his character. He is the God that he says, I am committing you, I'm entrusting you because I'm on my way out. I'm not going to see you anymore. I'm pretty much done, and he is. I mean, we know now. We don't know here, but we'll eventually know that he's going to be done. But he says, I'm entrusting you not just to God, but also his character. And who God is the God of grace. Now, listen carefully on this. Because he's writing to a group of men in the churches in this Asia Minor. Within the next few decades, by the year 70, in the timeline of history, these pastors, these people, this you, plural you, are going to be severely persecuted. So what's the point? That this word grace is not the implication of the lack or the absence of tragedy. Because most people think that if God is graceful, God is a God of grace, tragedy shouldn't happen. That's not what it implies. So what I want to do for the next few minutes, I want to explain to you what grace is not, just to make sure that we're in the same deal. Grace is not when someone is simply calling out to God, hoping for God to answer a prayer. Tonight, you'll hear this in just a second, but I'll give you a little announcement. Tonight, we'll gather at 6:30 for prayer. And a lot of prayer looks like this, because sometimes we find ourselves in desperate situations. Listen to me for a second. That is not grace. That is not grace. That is just a person desperate, which is fine. Some of us get to that place of desperation. Grace is not when you get to the place where you're drowning, and you're drowning is so, like the previous one, you look like you're going to drown, but you haven't drowned yet. But this one, now you're like the last bubbles coming out of your in your region, and then God shows up and just rescues you. That is not grace. The grace of God, what it does, it exposes who you are and who we are. If you want to know the grace of God, the character, the mercy, the holiness of God, you do not begin by simply facing, calling, searching for a God that improves your condition. God is not a negotiator. Does that make sense? God is not the God that simply sees who's the one with the biggest faith, with the most passion, with the most desperation. God always engages people. This is the grace of God, that unless you are like Saul of Tarsus, eventually Paul, the guy that is talking, we're talking about, he is on the road to Damascus, not as a desperate person, not as a person who is, you know, kind of a reconsidering and rethinking, like me reflecting over mom and a spiritual journey. See, listen to me. No one has the ability to seek the Lord until the individual is saved. There is not such a thing as God seekers. You don't have the ability to seek the Lord, because seeking the Lord is the ability that the Holy Spirit gives you once he indwells in you. I don't know if that makes sense. But if you do not know God and you do not know his character, who he is and who he says he is, this is your condition. This is my condition. So generosity begins from the understanding that it's not what I possess, what I've been entrusted, it's about who you are. And if there is anything that has been entrusted to you, but specifically your salvation, it's always with the understanding that it's been given as an act of mercy and grace, not as something that you deserved. Because the reason why you and I, we are in this condition, this is the reason why, is because of Genesis 3. Genesis 3 teaches us that what God is supposed to give us is justice, not mercy, not grace. What does that mean? That implies that nobody deserves to go to heaven. Everybody should go to hell. That's what the Bible teaches. I know that's not very, you know, inviting, but I'm just explaining to you what grace is. So Paul, what he does is he shows us who we were before the God of grace. But now that you have met the God of grace, let's talk about it. So again, I have committed, I have given, I have entrusted, I'm on my way out, I won't see you anymore. I'm entrusting you to the God who called me, who, me myself, I have experienced the grace of God, road to Damascus. I was on my way to kill Christians. God shows up to me, transforms my heart. Watch this. And the purpose of this grace, if you are saved, if you're a safe person, is for the purpose that you can do what? You can build you. This grace builds you up. What's the point? Look at me for a second. The purpose for you to experience the grace of God is so you can see Jesus like this. This is who Jesus is and was on this earth. Jesus was the person that when he was born, and we're fixing to go into Christmas, Philippians chapter 2, Paul speaks in Philippians, says, because he did not consider to be in equality with God, something to be grasped. Remember that? But what does he do? He literally detaches. He gives himself, and he comes into this world, born of a manger, as a baby boy, walks for 33 years, to the point that when he is at the Garden of Gethsemane as a grown man, 33-year-old grown man, he prays and says, Father, not my will, but yours. So when Paul says and preaches and says, see, this grace that saves you from deadness into life, from darkness into light, is the grace that should also help you to be and to do life the rest of your days as a saved person. And for many of us, unfortunately, this is where generosity breaks down. For many of us, we are okay with this at the beginning of the journey, becoming a follower of Jesus or saved. But once we are Christians, we do not believe that we should live like this. Once we are Christians, then we get to do our own deal. And Paul says, no. See, grace is the ability for you to be built up. And look at me for a second. Building up doesn't mean that you improve your condition. I want you to improve. I want you to stop doing some habits. You and I need to change some lifestyles and mindset. Yeah, we got to do that. But listen to me. The building up is obviously Jesus. The reason why you're saved is so you can make decisions and experience generosity through the character and the person of Jesus, that he says, this is the prerequisite, this is kind of the preamble that also not only allows you to build you up, but also is going to give all of you, again, those are plural use, it's not singular, so American individualism, non-biblical, it's against the scriptures. Look at this, give you all what? See, the inheritance, and again, I don't have time to go into details because I got to go back into the Old Testament. I'm not going to do that. But the inheritance, what it means is a change of worldview. What's the win at the end? Within the last few Sundays, I'll say 2 weeks, we have done 3 funerals as a church. 3 funerals, just back to back, boom, 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 3 people. And we always talk about heaven, and we believe in heaven. But look at me for a second. The inheritance is not about what you get at the end. It's the worldview that changes on what you're supposed to get. Why? Because for us, the inheritance is literally, it's God. So what do you get at the end? Why are you working? I don't know if I'm making myself clear. Many people think about, okay, so worship God, seek God, follow God, so you can be blessed. The blessing is God. I don't know what else you're looking for. Right? I mean, this is Paul again, just having this experience of just reflecting over it. He says, the inheritance is something that you experience among those who are sanctified. So if you are taking notes, or you may just not take notes today, here's grace. Grace is simply the ability given by God to choose Christ-likeness. Quick parenthesis. It's pretty obvious. It's pretty obvious. And I hope by now you know this. If you're visiting today, I just want you to get familiar to how we look at the scriptures in this place. If you're not choosing Christ-likeness, look at me. If you're not choosing Christ-likeness, you're simply choosing self-righteousness, self-indulgence, self-exaltation. And the last time that I checked, it does not go well for anybody, not for you and those around you. So the antidote of Christ-likeness in this case is something that he's going to be accused of, which is covetousness. In the next verse, he says, I have not. Although I've been accused, and if you read his letters, he wrote about 13 of the 27 of the New Testament, Paul. He typically begins his letters, Ephesians, Colossians, Thessalonians, all these letters. He typically begins and says, I, apostle of Jesus Christ. I, Paul, servant of Jesus Christ. Why? Because he was constantly accused that he was fake, that his apostleship was not authoritative. Why? Because he eventually is going to be accused of being, what's the opposite of Christ-likeness? What is the opposite of generosity? It's self-indulgence. Is the type of person that by default, look at me for a second, because see, man, I wish I had time to explain this in detail, but I guess I'm going to make the time because I got to explain this to you. The inheritance that you received and I received by the first Adam is covetousness. We don't have a choice. We always look for our own deal first. That's an inheritance. You don't have to teach a little kid to be selfish, right? You don't. No, nobody goes through selfishness 101. It's just innate in us. But when the second Adam is introduced, and second Adam as in Christmas, the one who was like God became like us and been in the condition of us, he became a servant and servant on a cross to the point of death, Jesus, the second Adam changes the inheritance. And the inheritance now is something that he is defending, because now what he's talking about how he's been free to actually avoid or to reverse our first inheritance. So if you are a follower of Jesus, and if you call yourself a Christian, if I am proclaiming that Jesus and his power is real, the first thing that we need to deal with is the concept of covetousness, the concept of self-indulgence, the concept of that we typically argue in our minds, and we know that we are right for that. Now, here's a warning. The warning that I believe Paul is giving us is because, and again, this is just common sense to a certain degree, is that covetousness or again, pride or greed, you never see it on the mirror. I've done tons of funerals, and I have never seen a person on their deathbed telling me, I just spent too much money on me on this life. I have so much regrets. No, nobody thinks like that. We always argue why we look for our own benefit first. Does that make sense? No one sees greed in the mirror. That's all that I'm trying to tell you. You typically tell yourself when you see yourself in the mirror, I'm just a go-getter. I'm just a driven person. I'm just planning things ahead. I'm educated. I'm a hard-working individual. Anybody tracking what I'm saying? See, Paul says, no. See, the issue with the mirror is that nobody looks either covetousness or pride in the mirror. So the antidote, look at what he says. He says, you've accused me, I'm not. So I have never coveted anyone's silver, gold, or clothing. But instead, look at how he presents the antidote. You yourselves, again, the concept of plurality, you know that these hands of mine have done what? In other words, look at what he's saying. He's talking about this, the supplying, the provision of his needs, and also the needs of my companions as a missionary, as a church planter, whatever Paul did. So here's the spectrum. On one side, we do not believe on covetousness or greed, as in the gospel, the prosperity gospel, name it and claim it theology. We don't believe in that. But the flip side of that, we do not embrace the gospel of poverty, that we should feel guilty because God bless us. I don't know if that makes sense. So as Christians, we do not apologize for the blessings that we have. Is that okay with I know you? Now, again, whether you are in a season of abundance, whether you're in a season of no abundance and you're going through a very difficult time, whether it's in your health, whether it's in relationships that is driven by covetousness and self-indulgence, you might be financially in a very difficult season, or you may be blessed financially. Look at me for a second. If we can establish that the goal is management, administration to God through the grace of God, and we just explained what grace is not and what grace is, so whether you have a lot or you have little, both experiences, because money, watch this please, money is amoral. Money is not good or bad. Money is money. Does that make sense? Resources are resources. So in this case, the goal is that we learn that as we supplied, as we work, as we do what we were called to do, those experiences in abundance or in moments of difficulty, we are shaped into the building up of the character of Jesus. Because the Bible, interestingly enough, the Bible gives you, through the entire Bible, very wealthy people that honor God and very poor people that honor God. So which of the two is it? And the answer is? The answer is yes. The answer is yes. So for us, because we have a family, Adele and I, we've been married for almost 22 years now. And I don't know, again, I'm a guy of routine. So part of my routine is that I wake up early in the morning. I'm a morning person. So 5:30, you know, ready to go, ready to roll. This morning was a little different. I don't know why, but this morning I woke up earlier than 5. I don't know if you've ever been in that situation where you just wake up and something wakes you up. Something just wakes you up. And I'm not talking about noise or your kid or, you know, I'm talking about that something. So something woke me up this morning at 4 a.m. And I'm the type of person that if I wake up, it's game over. I just can't go back to sleep. I got to get up. I know I don't. I'm old. I still don't get free coffee at Whataburger. But anyways, so the thing is that I woke up at 4 in the morning. And then I realized why I woke up. Because there was no electricity. The lights went out. So what woke me up actually was that the electricity came on and off, and I was hearing, in my sleep, I was hearing the air conditioning. That's why I woke up. I realized after I was awake. So, you know, the rule is that in our home, that whoever wakes up or whoever is up that early has to take care of this guy. And when you look at this guy and you look at this picture, you realize that this guy has issues. He does. He does have issues. I'm still looking for a counselor. But anyway, so not for me, for him. Well, maybe for both. Anyway, so the thing is that, it's pitch dark. I mean, this morning was cloudy. So there, like the whole block, the whole neighborhood is just no power whatsoever. So I took him outside and I had to get my, literally, this is our flashlight at home. So I took him and I we have a rule at home that when you open this light door, the back door, and he has a leash because he is also very hyperactive. I'm telling you, this guy has issues. And so we opened the door and we literally step on the leash and he is standing there. And then we have to do a quick shh with this because typically, especially in the summer, this guy goes after these guys. And it's not a good picture. So you have to use the flashlight to go and look around. Now, this morning, I had to use a flashlight with him all the time because it was dark, and my dog has issues. It's just hyperactive. So I'm looking for him, and I'm chasing him through the morning, freshness of the morning, rehearsing my sermon, actually. That's what I'm doing. And I'm going and seeking for him. See, I believe money. Let me switch the picture because that's an ugly picture. I believe money is like the flashlight. I don't believe money is an idol. I think what money does is shows you your idols. Because wherever you're investing, whatever you're putting your money on, that's basically where your heart is. Would you agree to that? I think money is neutral. I think I need this, but it just depends what's going to show me. Because eventually money is going to show me what's important to me, what's priority to me. That's what money does. So Paul is saying, I have never coveted. You guys are witnesses of this, that my prayer today, and this is how I want us to close our conversation today. I want us to understand that although you have to look in the mirror, and when you look at the mirror, you don't recognize this greed, this power-driven individual or selfishness, Paul simply says, let me show you how you break this inheritance of the first Adam over you. This greed that you are not able to see in the mirror. How do you break that? This is how you break it. You break it by looking at the next verses. In everything, not just on Sunday, not just when there is a Operation Christmas Child, project that you're supposed to give, not when you have a testimony of a missionary. Not in everything, Paul says, and look at this beauty. The beautiful thing about everything that he says is not what he believed. It's not what he learn from, Bible college or his parents in Judaism, is in everything that I did, because what you believe eventually marries what you do. Anybody what I'm saying? Listen to me for a second. So what you believe eventually comes to the surface and is crystallized on your behavior. So he says, my behavior, I have showed you, all of you plural, pastors, churches, that by this kind of hard work, so again, the antidote of greed is hard work, obviously, we must help who? Those who help themselves? No, that's not biblical. You understand that if the goal is Christ's likeness, Jesus is the one that came to the people that he wasn't supposed to come to, right? Jesus dealt with individuals that religion, government, society simply marginalize. I'm always blown away when I see all these immigrants coming from Central South America. I'm blown away, and I just unavoidably, I just think about it. Jesus was an immigrant. Jesus was a foreigner. Remember the story of Christmas? He had to go to Egypt. He was, anyway, I'm just, just looking for the oppressed, intentionally looking for those in need, that he tells us, apparently, these pastors, these churches, they were forgetting. If the opposite of remembering is forgetting, then Paul is saying, the time is going to come where people are going to move from deadness into life in Jesus. But then they're going to try to do things on their own. And they're going to start looking at the mirror and they're not going to see greed. They're going to be at a point where they're going to start being driven by indulgence and self-righteousness. for you guys, pastors, you're going to deal with churches that they're going to be a mixture of understandings and cultures and philosophies and theology, that at the end, I need you to remember one single thing, because you're not going to see me anymore. I'm not going to be with you anymore, but I want you to remember one single thing. And the one single thing is that I want you to remember, not my words, but the words of, come on. So parents, here's your legacy. Here is my challenge as a parent of three. Is that long after we're gone and YouTube is gone and Facebook is gone and technology is in a different stage, I want you to know that the only thing that will remain forever is the words of Jesus Christ. Why? Look at me. This is why. It's not because he was right. It's not because he was the Son of God. You know why? Because Jesus, look at me. Jesus is the one that you became the treasure where his heart went after. 2,000 years ago, he left the heavenlies thinking of you. Not thinking of the better version of you, because some of you are like, okay, one day I will get serious on this. No, he's thinking about your brokenness and your craziness. And the moment that you and I, we have these mental lapses that we forget that this is about the gospel of Jesus Christ. So Paul, as he literally departs from these brothers, he says, I want you to know what Jesus said. And Jesus said that the blessing, the mercy, the grace that was given to you is for the purpose to reverse the inheritance. You inherited a mindset of a taker. You by nature, because of your father Adam, you were born into covetousness. I was the first one of those because I was on the road to Damascus, he says, to kill Christians. But something happened that this Jesus showed out to me. So something happened that he transformed my life, not to a better version of myself. He made me a giver. He made me a man that I'm sitting here with you today, 2,000 years ago, because I'm fixing to go. Well, let's just read it so you don't hear me that I'm making things up. I'm at the place where now I'm a giver because I'm compelled by what? Not by the need of people. What am I compelled by? See, the sign of salvation in grace and mercy is an individual that is led by the Spirit of God. Some of you have been sealed with the Spirit of God. Some of you are saved. Some of you are just struggling to allow the compelling and the drawing, the feeling, the voice of the Spirit. It is, I'm going to Jerusalem, not knowing what will happen to me there. Now, I know what's going to happen to you, brother. It's not going to be good. You're going to lose. You're going to detach your head from your body. Never good. Never good when that happens. I only know that in every city, and by the way, these are the previous verses. That's how he introduced. I'm using his intro as a closing. I only know that in every city, not Caesar Augustus. I know Caesar is in the throne, but we said from the beginning that authority is always limited. I'm drawn, driven, compelled by supreme authority. I know financially this is a difficult season, but my God will supply more than enough. I know what they did to me, they do not deserve, nor I want to forgive them. But when you are led and guided by the Spirit, look at what happens. He doesn't promise, he doesn't warn you of simply prosperity and wellness. He shows you that if the goal from day one was to be built up, to receive the inheritance, which is Jesus himself, with the sanctified, that's what we said on the previous verses, it is pretty obvious that it is exclusively through prison and hardships that takes you there. So if 2,000 years ago, for Jesus, imprisonment and hardships were his vocation, he came to this world to suffer, and his suffering was the vehicle to glorify the Father. Look at me for a second. Stop thinking that your difficulties and your trials and your tribulations is God simply not knowing what to do with you. Is simply God taking a little break and forgetting that you needed this help. And he slipped his mind. And no. Listen, for us as Christians, because of the Holy Spirit, now our tragedies, our difficulties are simply our vocation. That's what we're called to be and do, so we can walk in Christ's likeness. And this morning, I want to remind you that however, over everything that is going on, I consider my life, what is it? So parents, if you are raising singles, listen to me for a second. I'm asking you, I'm begging you, I'm imploring before you, I'm praying, and I've been thinking over it this week, especially for singles, because I love singles. I got three at home. Listen to me. singleness is about learning to consider your life literally worth nothing. Not because you don't have any worth or value. What's the reason? Because that's the only way that you're going to be able to aim to do what? Because many Christians 2,000 years ago were not finishing their race. So if you're dating, want to date, want to get married, my suggestion, date, marry people who their life is nothing. Deadness. Remember at the beginning? Drown. Not someone that is grasping the one. No. You need to date. You need to choose. You need to become and choose somebody that literally their life is worth nothing so they can do what? So marriage, look at me. Marriage is about finishing the race together. That's what marriage is all about. It's not about feeling in love all the time. Come on, that's Hollywood. That's nonsense. You don't feel in love all the time. You know that. I know that. Well, why do we stay together? Because the purpose of marriage is way beyond your feelings. It's about a covenant that you made to finish the race and complete the task. What is the task? See, listen to me. The task of the family, the task of your parenthood, the task of your singleness, the task of your older generation, younger generation, elderly years, whatever the case may be, is for you to become literally a giver, a generous person that you begin by simply testifying, not of your generosity, but of the generosity of the God. 2,000 years ago, gave himself because you were his treasure, because he loved you, and he gave his life on a Roman cross. So today, you can experience everlasting life.